Third hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on this Thursday afternoon, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Like I said, ending last hour, this should get Chase very excited because we're going to be talking about his Bravos. Let's bring in Brian Jordan, Braves analyst, to talk about the Atlanta Braves and things that have been going on early on in this season. Brian, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
Yeah, great. Thanks for joining us today. So just, you know, a week, in fact, today is exactly a week in the books since Major League Baseball got their 60-game season going. How would you describe what you've seen to this point?
Well, I would describe it as a slow start for the Braves, especially with that starting rotation, trying to figure that out with the absence of Cole and Hernandez opting out, really changed the whole scene of the starting rotation coming into the season. You know, Fulton Nevich, I guess the patience ran out of Alex Anthopoulos and the Braves. And, you know, the hitting, getting off to a real slow start. You got 72 strikeouts over six games. That's entirely too many strikeouts. But you kind of understand the pitching always has an advantage going into the season. But, you know, guys don't have the time of 162 games to get it going. So it's been stressful so far with the Braves. But last night was a big win for them against Tampa. Tampa's a pretty good team, great pitching rotation. So hopefully they can split the series tonight.
Yeah, you literally took the words out of my mouth, Brian. We all know that, and you know this better than us, that the pitchers get the advantage early on in a long regular season, and then things come around. The catchers or the hitters catch up, and you know everything balances out. But you know, 19 strikeouts in a game, 15 strikeouts in a game, 12 strikeouts in a game. It's like, holy cow. Like it's
At some point you would think, and, you know, Kevin Seitz is great, one of the best hitting coaches out there. You know those guys are starting they will start to shorten up their swing and put the ball in play. You put the ball in play, you see what happens. Tampa made some errors and, you know, kind of broke the game open for the Braves. So they got to figure out a way to put that ball in play.
How do you think you would have handled this? Yeah, obviously you didn't have to go through anything like this as a player. I'm sure you've thought about it and talked about it. How do you think you would have handled this year as a player?
Well, I'm on record, you know, because you think about 9/11 when the country was shut down and the Braves, we were the first team back in New York. I mean, there was a lot of hesitation. Of wanting to go back and after the tragic incidents that happened. But for me as a player, I felt like, you know, we needed sports back and we needed baseball back in New York. So it was a sacrifice that, you know, I was willing to make. And I look at this year, you know, same situation, a lot different, but, you know, there's a sacrifice that athletes have to make for the fans because, you know, what's going on around the country. I mean, we need sports back. And, you know, so it's good to see the guys in Major League Baseball, NBA, NFL trying to figure out how to take safety precautions and get guys back out there. But I would have been willing to take the sacrifice and play through this.
What do you make of just what's been going on? I know you've got your job to do with the Braves, but I'm sure you've been taking a peek at the Dodgers-Astros series. No love lost between those two teams and what Joe Kelly did and all that. What do you make of all that? Since you played the game, you understand how that dynamic works.
Well, I'm not surprised. I know a lot of teams, especially the Dodgers, who lost two World Series to both the Red Sox and the Astros in an unfair manner now that everything has come out. I know they're angry, and, you know, it does not surprise me as players with competitors, and, you know, you want to get some type of revenge, and I felt like those eight games is entirely too much for Joe Kelly.
Yeah.
Especially since he didn't hit him, but I'm quite sure they'll probably lessen that punishment, but I'm not surprised at all. You know, in spring training, it was already happening to the Astros. You know, they were getting thrown at. There's no place in baseball for cheating, and you know, for the commissioner to make the decision that he made of not taking away the championship, world championship from them, then, you know, you got to live with the consequences. And, you know, there's a lot of teams out there that work really hard and, you know, did it the right way. And unfortunately, the Dodgers did not win. So I know the fans and everybody else in L.A. are probably celebrating that they're throwing at these guys.
We're talking to Brian Jordan. He's an analyst for Fox Sports South and the Atlanta Braves, and, of course, played many years in the majors for the Braves, the Cardinals. You not just looking at the Braves, Brian, but just teams overall, hitters overall, of just the routine that you go through, going through spring training, and some guys, you know, they start a little slower than others. You know, I just said jokingly of you don't have April anymore in a 60-game season. You can't work through the first month of the season. So how would you, if you were in this situation, how would you go about trying to change your routine to maybe get your swing going sooner rather than later because you don't have a lot of time to do it?
Well, I mean, it is definitely a different season. And to stop the spring training and guys just, you know, sitting for so many days and trying to start back up in a 60-game season, I know it's difficult. I had to go through it in 95 on the strike season. Totally different, though, because we still had a long season ahead of us. You really had to grind it out and be prepared, and that's something that, you know, you look at Fulton Nevich not having his velocity and not really performing at the level that the Braves expected. You know, I think that's from lack of preparation. I think he has the talent, but, you know, a lot of guys probably didn't think through this COVID that it was going to come back. And probably didn't prepare. And, you know, hitters are going to be behind. It's no question about it. I don't care how much you try to stay in the cages through this tough time. You know, seeing 96, 97 mile an hour, you know, from a pitcher is totally different from hitting off a pitching machine. So I expected hitters to start out slow. You look around the league, it's happening. It's a lot of strikeouts around the league. And I think it's going to take this first week to get guys back locked in and focused, and, you know, it's going to take them shortening up their swing and trying to figure it out, you know, and cutting back on those big swings.
We got to know Dansby Swanson a lot during his time here in Nashville when he played at Vanderbilt, and to watch him now from afar, or, you know, and I'm a Braves fan, so to watch him and see how his game has evolved, what have you seen out of him over the last really couple years where he's come into his own. He maybe has shed the whole, yeah, he's the number one overall pick, he's just got to go out and play. But what have you seen?
Well, he's been injured, and a healthy Dansby Swanson is an all-star Dansby. He's fun to watch. This guy has a lot of talent. He's great defensively in the infield, and his hitting is coming around greatly. It's just he needs to stay healthy. The last couple of years, he's been hot and start out great, and then he has an injury that cuts his season short and, you know, hurts his season. He's a guy that I feel like if he can stay healthy, man, he can be an all-star year after year.
And then, and of course, the guy at the top of the lineup for the Braves, Ronald Acuña Jr., he's kind of had a slow start, but have you seen some of the maybe the maturity issues that he's had in years past, you know, working with Brian Snicker, the manager? Have you seen some of those improve, and do you have the confidence that even though he's had the slow start, he's going to be able to work through some of that?
Yeah, I definitely have the confidence he's going to work through it. Kevin Seitz is in his head, and, you know, you can slowly see him. He took a couple of walks yesterday. He's starting to, you know, try to be patient. He's starting to try to hit the ball the other way. So you can see the adjustments being made by Ronald Acuña. You know, he's an MVP type of player. It's very humbling, I know, to come into the season and, you know, be the odds favorite to win an MVP. A lot of pressure on a young kid like that. But, you know, he just wants to go out there and achieve greatness. And you can see him trying to make the adjustments day by day. And I expect him to probably be hot next week.
How big is it going to be to have Nick Markakis come back and make the decision that, you know, he's not going to opt out, he's going to be a part of this? It's going to take him a little bit of time to get back in shape and all of that. But just from a leadership standpoint, having him in the clubhouse, how big is that going to be?
Oh, it's going to be huge. The young guys need him back. This is a guy that's been consistent throughout his career, especially the last 3 years here with the Braves. I mean, he's been the most consistent player in the lineup as far as putting the ball in play, driving in runs, coming through in the clutch. And he understands the game, and his knowledge is important for these young kids, and especially watching these guys through the first six games with 72 strikeouts. I mean, he's a guy to be able to talk some humbleness and talk some, you know, guys into shortening up their swing and work on just putting the ball in play, find some holes, and that swing will come. And he's a perfect example of it. And like you said, you know, you can't buy that leadership.
You know, we enjoyed watching the different documentaries and old games and all of that during quarantine, but ESPN did the 30 for 30, the long gone summer. You were on that Cardinals team in 1998 playing with Mark McGwire. What was it like from your perspective to watch him go on that run and ultimately break the home run record?
You know, it was great to be a part of that. And, you know, for Mark McGwire, he's a great teammate. And we were all pulling for him. And, you know, for me, I had a job to do, myself and Ray Langford, and that was to protect him, hitting behind him. We had to perform. We had to come up big, or he would never see pitches to have that opportunity. And, you know, to be able to see it live, and the fact that it was Sammy Sosa with great personality, it brought baseball back, you know, because we went through that strike in 95, and fans weren't convinced in coming back to the stadium. And to see that home run chase race with Sammy Sosa, it brought baseball back on the map.
Did you say you hit after Mark that season?
Yeah, myself and Ray Langford, we were sharing duties at the number four spot.
You probably felt like a leadoff hitter sometimes. Probably weren't a lot of guys on bases a lot of times when you came up.
Exactly, but he cost me a lot of RBIs being in front of me too. So.
One last thing, Brian. You know, your setup there at SunTrust, now Truist Park. You know, we've been to Braves games. It's a fantastic park. That whole area is great. And your setup that you do, how strange is it that you guys, you know, you're so used to interacting with the fans and being there, you know, right in the middle of everything and just not have that. It's got to be bizarre, right?
Oh, it is bizarre. I was talking to Jerome Jerenovich, my host, good friend. I said, I'm going to start bringing some of those cardboard cutouts and putting them in the studio just so I can feel like I'm talking to the fans, because it's too much thinking going on in that studio.
Hey, thanks for doing this. Keep up the good work. Good to talk to you, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, that is Brian Jordan. Of course, former big leaguer, now part of the Braves telecast, and does a good job with them, and they are currently in a series with the Rays, and they'll be back at it tonight at 6:10 our time. It'll be the Braves and the Rays, and it'll be was it Fried going tonight for Atlanta?
Yep, Max Fried. Looking forward to that. I think he's got a lot of talent, talented young man. And again, you feel okay about their 1 and 2, but then it's behind them that I worry about with the Braves. So Soroka and Max Fried being the top two pitchers, and then just figuring it out from there. That's what they got to work on.
That 98 season for Brian Jordan, he actually had his best batting average in his career that season.
Yeah.
316. He had 25 homers, 91 RBI, stole 17 bases. Let's see, had 40 walks, which I think, no, second career high in walks, which is interesting, right, because he said he batted after Mark McGwire, him and Ray Lankford. Strikeouts, had 66 with over, let's see, 564 at-bats. Think about that. He had 66 strikeouts in 564 at-bats. What do you think 564 at-bats for a lot of hitters in today's game? How many strikeouts do you think that would equate to?
166? Or 166, yeah. I mean, it'd be a lot. I mean, it just shows you how different the eras are. I mean, the pitching's better. You know, the pitching has gotten – it has ebbs and flows of, you know, pitchers have an advantage, batters have an advantage, but – you know, when he came to the Braves the next year, you know, I mean, he was a big part of getting them back to the World Series and part of that lineup. And, I totally forgot he went to the Dodgers after he left Atlanta, and then eventually came back to Atlanta.
Yeah.
But
he had two stints with the Braves.
Yep. So, and retired there, and now does a great job with them as a part of, their pre and their post with Fox Sports South.
Elliot Friedman coming up at 1 o'clock today. Weekly chat with him from Sportsnet. We'll come back. More on the other side on this Thursday afternoon. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Be listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game for your cue to call tomorrow in the 8 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and 4 o'clock hours for your chance to qualify for a free Nashville Predators jersey. Don't forget today's exhibition pregame coverage begins at 2 o'clock right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, your flagship home of the Nashville Predators radio network. And in the 1 o'clock hour, that is going to be all Preds. We'll have Elliot Friedman to kick things off, but then also want to hear from all of you what you're expecting today from the Nashville Predators, what you want to see, and I'll give you my three things to watch as we act as the pregame to the pregame. And DMAC, of course, will have pregame coverage, as I mentioned, starting at 2 o'clock. So looking forward to watching some hockey. Appreciate Brian Jordan for joining us. I'll tell you, Elijah, he was one of my favorites, and I guess for some he's more known as a Cardinal, but he was on some pretty good Braves teams. He always batted right after Chipper, and I always loved Brian Jordan, a two-sport athlete, but always loved him when he was with the Atlanta Braves, and now does a great job with them. I don't know if you remember his playing days. You're a little younger than I am, but
a little. Yeah. More so as a Dodger, I guess.
Blanked. I forgot that he was. I was like, oh yeah, he did go to the Dodgers.
Yeah, he's been. He was on some good Dodgers teams too. I mean, it's a good indictment of how good a hitter or underrated hitter he was, because I mean, this guy played for three different teams in the National League, hit in like top three or four spots in the lineups on all those teams almost, and they were all really good teams. I mean, yeah. he made, you know, some lineups that he was in better. So he was a good tool to use as an outfielder. But I remember mostly as a Dodger.
Yeah.
I started watching ball probably around like 2002, 2003. And I know he was on the Dodgers for the MVP Baseball 2003 roster from EA Sports. And that was my introduction to Major League Baseball, so to speak.
Darren's going to be back in just a second. I know, so I listened this morning. I heard Marquise all excited about it, but the NBA makes its return tonight. I know you have to be pretty pumped about that as well.
Oh, I am over the moon to hear some NBA basketball or watch some NBA basketball. Man, it's surreal. I mean,
we
I watched
J
a video
games
today.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, the Grizzlies will play tomorrow as well, and they got a couple really big ones. And now that really for the first eight games coming back, or their finish to quote unquote the regular season, is going to be incredibly exciting too, because there's a massive race for the eighth seed in the Western Conference. And the Grizzlies, I did see where the Grizzlies can go like 3-5 and still make the playoffs, but they have the hardest schedule of almost anyone back coming into it. And teams like the Pelicans and Blazers have much easier schedules. And of course, the reason they did that was because the Grizzlies had had the hardest schedule in the NBA for the last stretch of the year anyway. So they tried to mirror what their last few weeks were that would have been in the regular season. So it's going to be tough. I mean, the Grizzlies can win like three or four, but those three or four are going to be really, really big games. And the Blazers are back and healthy. The Pelicans will have Zion Williamson, and they looked really good in the scrimmages. And what I really want to see, though, is them like experiment with the broadcast and just like let us hear the trash talk between players. Yeah. I want that so bad.
I think
they'll
hear that
too.
Yeah. I want to hear it. And, you know, just the matchups. I mean, we know that the Pelicans are in this thing because the NBA wants Zion. I mean, they want to feature Zion. I think you can say Ja Morant probably falls in the category, not to the same extreme as Zion, but you know, I think the Grizzlies having their future star in Ja Morant, that's going to be a storyline to watch around here. But Jazz Pelicans, that's the first game.
That's going to be exciting.
Yeah, well, because the Jazz, Rudy Gobert, I mean, that's how this all ended.
It's only fitting. Yeah.
Yeah, so now they're part of the restart. So they'll play the Pelicans and then the nightcap tonight. I cannot wait for this one. Oh. Clippers, Lakers, the Battle of Los Angeles in Orlando. But LeBron James chasing title number four with three different teams. So I think that, you know, you talk about legacy and all of that. That's obviously playing into it. But Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers, you know, he's trying to get his third title with his third different team. So,
which would be wild, by the way. I don't think that's ever happened in the NBA. A player win an MVP or Finals MVP, at least. Assuming if the Clippers win, he would be the Finals MVP. It could be Paul George, but we never know. But if he does that, he'd have to be the only player, I think, in almost any professional sport to win three championship MVPs for three different organizations. I can't think of any that come to mind right now.
In your mind, is it in the West, is it Lakers, Clippers, and that's pretty much those two?
I mean, yeah, that's safe to say, especially since, like, Utah, probably their biggest loss was losing Bojan Bogdanovic. Guy was, like, the one thing that team needed to compete with other teams and play spoiler was three-point shooting, and that guy was their best three-point shooter by far. He was shooting, like, 42% on, like, six or seven attempts a game, and they lose that three-point threat, so... The Jazz are, I don't take them as seriously as contender. I think the Nuggets could surprise people just because they are so deep. And if Nikola Jokic is what he was when the season was suspended, I mean, he's a top five or six player in the league. And, you know, that alone in the NBA can carry you to some playoff wins. I think the Nuggets and Rockets, and I'm not going to count out the Rockets either just because of their small ball approach, I think they can upset some teams and really make some noise. It's because they're hard to game plan against. They're going to shoot like 53s a game. So if they get hot one night, it doesn't matter how well LeBron and AD play. I mean, we saw them do that right before the season got suspended. And the Lakers shot like an ungodly percentage from the field. And the Rockets still won because they were just hitting threes everywhere. And they became a matchup nightmare. So I think the Rockets could and the Jazz could. Or not the Jazz, the Nuggets. But, I mean, realistically speaking, it would be a stunner if anyone other than the two LA teams represented the West.
You can hear that game tonight starting at 7:30 on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and then tomorrow night, Rockets Mavericks at 7:30 on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So we got you covered with hockey coming back in the NBA, and I know, Darren, you're back with us too. So I'm not leaving my house today. There's so much to watch. Got the Preds coming up in just a little bit. The NBA tonight, the Braves obviously play. So, I don't know. I'm going to have to work in, you know, getting up from the couch at some point, but this is going to be a good day.
Oh, I'm there with you. Got no tidal wave baseball tonight, no practice. I had that last night. This is going to be a TV and radio day for sure.
And you get to do your job from the house,
which is going to be a first. So you've got Pete and Hal with their setup in their room in the arena. And downstairs, and I'm going to be doing it from my home, which, you know, normally, you know, I guess this is we'll call this a road game. I mean, the whole thing is going to be a road game. Typically, I would go into the studio and do it.
Yeah.
But honestly, depending on who's on the board, whether it's Elijah, Ian, whoever, there's really no difference other than I'm just not looking at somebody, you know, that's really it. You know, cause I'm just in there looking at, we've got the television set up in the studios. And so I've got my television set up here and really, I don't anticipate just kind of like these shows for the last 4.5 months. I mean, I thought the shows would be, you know, and I don't know, I probably shouldn't say anything cause I may jinx it. I haven't gone through this yet, so I don't know how smooth or not smooth it will be. I'm anticipating that everything will be just fine, just because if you had asked me which one has got the chance to be way trickier, I would have thought for sure the radio show, three of us and a producer, so basically four people, four different locations, all with equipment. Everything's got to go right. And we've had, I mean, a couple. When I say a couple, just very few hiccups in 4.5 months.
Sure.
And other than that, it's been as smooth as you can get. Like I said, four different voices, four different places, 4 hours a day. I anticipated way more, I guess, feeling out process and trying to get all this to work than it ever ended up being. It was really very, very seamless considering none of us had ever done that before. And so I'm expecting the same thing. Like I said, I don't know. Shame on me if I just jinx this. But I'm expecting for everything to be quite smooth and feel exactly the same, other than I'm not staring at someone behind the glass. That's really it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it'll be fine.
I just clipped Darren saying that, so if it does get jinxed, then we'll cold hard take you.
We know what tomorrow is at noon, so you know I'll deserve every bit of that. Every bit of what would be coming to me at noon if today just, you know, that just blows up in my face. But I'm excited. I'm with you. I mean, when we get off these airwaves, obviously I've got pregame duties starting at 2. We've got postgame duties, and then you're going to be doing stuff with Jeremy Gover and Justin Bradford after postgame.
Yep.
And so we've got a lot of work to do, but just a lot of watching hockey. By the way, Boston and Columbus will play their tune-up game after the Predators and the Stars. And then the nightcap, I plan on checking out some of the Coyotes. I want to see, you know, what they look like going into that series starting on Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock puck drop. Pregame at noon. Once again, more coverage right here on 102.5 The Game starting at 10, so 2 hours of coverage leading up to pregame, an hour of pregame, and then leading up to puck drop, and everything will be right here. This will be your place on Sunday, but I'm going to check out Arizona and Vegas tonight in the nightcap. That game will be a 9 o'clock start just to see what the Coyotes look like.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, because I think that's important. Because they're in the same boat as the Predators, that they have this one game to tune things up. And yes, you can have scrimmages and you can go up against each other and go through practice, but there is something different about playing a different opponent in a game-like setting. It's going to be their first time for both teams on the ice at Edmonton. So you got to learn that rink and learn how the puck bounces off the dasher boards and what the ice is like. And, you know, because that's another thing that I'm very, very curious about, that as this tournament goes on, the ice at Edmonton is going to get a lot. I mean, you're going to have multiple games a day, and yes, you got the Zamboni to clean it and all of that, but how is the ice going to hold up, and how are you going to be able to navigate through that if you're a player? So these are all things that you can start that process today of learning that. And and then also just the consistency, you know, what is the top six going to look like for the Predators? You know, are we going to see Jofa, how we know Jofa, or, you know, are those players going to be able to have what they've had in the past? And, you know, what does Taylor Hall look like? What does Nick, what does everybody else, Phil Kessel look like? I don't know who Nick Kessel is. I'm sure he's a nice guy.
Phil Kessel. I thought that's what I heard you say. I thought you were about to say Nick Kessel.
I was like, wait, Nick Kessel, who's that? Does he have a cousin? But yeah, Phil Kessel with the Coyotes, you know, what, because he didn't have that great of a season. So yeah, there's a lot to check out from these exhibition games. And, you know, I watched a little bit of Chicago to kind of see that, you know, watch some of the Blues, and it's fun. It's back. It's getting into the groove again.
It's been fun making the last stop on television, watching the nightcap. I was watching a lot of Winnipeg and Vancouver last night. By the way, Winnipeg looks pretty darn good. I know it's just an exhibition game. I mean, if you're going to go off that, Tampa looked really good as they just pounded Florida yesterday when we were on the air. But, but by the way, we went to Edmonton in the first hour and talked with Brooks Bratton, who is – the representative. You know, every team's got to take a representative, somebody to, he's wearing, going to be wearing a lot of hats up there at the Hub City. And so we had a good conversation with him. And I said on the front end, I said, I understand this may come off as a silly question, but I'm just going to ask you, did anybody else have that question? Like I thought, you know, the answer was yes, they're real. Like that would have been my answer. Yes, that's real. But on the back of my mind, I'm like, but also today was, you know, was it CGI, right? They can do anything on television. Like, they can make anything. I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, it looks like Queen is putting on a concert, you know, at Wembley Stadium. I mean, that's all CGI. And it's like they made it look like a sold-out 100,000 people at a concert. Like, you can do pretty incredible things today on television. You know, whether it's movies or, in this case, in a sporting event. And so I wasn't 100% sure, but did that ever cross your mind, or did you just go, oh, yeah, that's tarps?
No, I thought it was tarps. The thing that it could have been that you see a lot now is a green screen and they superimpose it, which I think is kind of what you were going with, that you were that it was that. But I thought it was all just tarps and that they had printed those out, and it looks cool.
Toronto and Edmonton both look cool. It looks cool.
Yeah, the setup for both, kudos to, one thing that was beneficial is being able to be on that conference call when I was driving back on Monday, and hear just the process of putting this all together and, you know, what the trial runs that they've done. And I mean, the NHL, you have to tip your cap to them. They have put a ton of work into both facilities, and they are spread out in both places by having people in Toronto, having people in Edmonton to do all this, and it's really paying off. And we're not even going to see, you know, what we're seeing in the exhibition games is I think just the beginning. We're going to see even more. You know, I can't wait to see some of the, you know, the game ops stuff that they've, you know, they work in, and from the teams to kind of give it that feel. So it's going to be neat moving forward of just what the visual is with this, because they don't have fans. So they have to make this a made for TV product. And I think they're going to do a good job, and radio, and do a good job of it.
You can turn on Saturday morning on NBC Sports Network at 11 o'clock in the morning, and you will watch, you could start watching Carolina and the Rangers, and it counts. Like, that's game one.
Let's go.
Let's go. That's on Saturday. And then Edmonton and Chicago after that is going to be on NBC at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And then after that is going to be the Islanders and the Florida Panthers. And that's going to be on NBC Sports Network. And then you think, okay, that's good. That's a lot. That's a lot of hockey. Oh, they're not done. Then Montreal and Pittsburgh in the nightcap on NBC. Saturday night, 7 o'clock our time. Pittsburgh and Montreal on NBC. And then in the nightcap, Calgary, or is it Calgary? Calgary and Winnipeg.
You've been waiting to do that, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while. I've missed saying that. That and the Knuckleheads. It's the two I've missed saying. Calgary and Knuckleheads. But that's going to be the nightcap on Saturday. That's what you get on Saturday. That's just from hockey. Forget all the baseball. Get a full slate of baseball. The NBA, as you guys were just talking about, it's getting cranked up as well. But yeah, that's where we are right now, and it is, man, is it a welcome sight?
Oh yeah, no, I cannot wait.
And then the Predators will get the full slate of action started on Sunday.
Yeah, and look, there's some good games after the Preds. I mean, you got St. Louis, Colorado. I'm looking forward to that.
Toronto, Columbus could be interesting. Minnesota, Vancouver in the nightcap.
So okay. I want to see if you're on the same page as me of looking at these matchups. And yes, we know what happened in the regular season. We think we kind of have an idea of where these teams are. But as it goes for an upset, does Columbus feel like they could be the candidate for the big upset player again, just because they're healthy?
Was it Scott Burnside? Who were we talking to this week that said that it felt like the two upset specials that were the Hub City host teams? That watch out, that the upset that could happen could be either Edmonton or Toronto, one of those two going down.
That may have been Scott, because I don't.
Or both. Here. You know.
Well, and I can see Chicago. You can say what you want. That yeah, they sold off, and they're just not very good. And a best of five. Could they
steal
one?
Pro Volleyball League to call Nashville home. League will have 40 players with four captains choosing teams each week. I just literally saw that.
Okay.
Pro Volleyball League to call Nashville home. Okay.
Nice.
We'll see if there's more to come from that. Yeah, he said the Hub Cities. Watch out. Upset specials.
Yeah, because Edmonton, I I've said it, I think they're good. I think they're a very good team. But that, now I got to see it. They got to prove it in the playoffs. And it's been a while since they've really proven it. And Chicago is, you know, Chicago's like, all right, well, we're here. We might as well do something with it. So let's go after it. And, you know, I watched some yesterday. They look pretty good. I know it's just an exhibition game, but young players on that team, obviously the veterans that we know and don't like here in Nashville, but wouldn't be shocked there. And then Columbus, as we've said, they're healthy. They were so beat up at the end of the regular season that that really hurt them, but now they're healthy and could really give something to Toronto. So that's going to be the fun part of watching all these series.
We'll make our predictions tomorrow on the show. We will make all of our qualifying round predictions tomorrow on the program as we wrap up the week. The cool thing about Monday, not only will we have a true reaction Monday, we're actually also going to have a game two of a qualifying round during our show in Carolina and the Rangers. That game will go off at 11 again. So we will have that game start and finish while we're on the airwaves.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
I guess I shouldn't come to that conclusion for sure. But
I mean, it'd probably be around two, close to it.
Well, we don't know, though. I mean, I don't know how long it's going to go. You know, overtime, there's no shootout.
Yeah.
A normal game, regular season game, sure. I know how – we know the time window, but we don't know. This is playoffs, man. So, yeah, we'll have the Rangers and Hurricanes during our show. So we'll have not only a reaction Monday to everything, but we'll actually also have a live game going on during the show. So that'll be fun. A lot of fun for sure. So we'll come back. We will wrap up the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You've heard us all day on the show talk about Game 1 on Sunday, Predators and Coyotes. You're not going to want to miss that. There's going to be a watch party viewing destination that will include Burger Republic and Party Foul. If I could spit it out, Burger Republic and Party Foul, have been to both. They're both fantastic. You can stop by Burger Republic in Lenox Village or Mount Juliet and enjoy a Fours Burger for a limited time and a $4 Happen Harry's Pints. Party Foul locations are in Cool Springs Galleria in Franklin, in Murfreesboro off Broad Street, and in Donaldson off Lebanon Pike, and downtown in the Gulch. Wear your gold and bring the noise to root on the Predators in their game against the Coyotes on Sunday. Party Foul and Burger Republic will be following social distancing guidelines while you watch the Preds. So it should be a lot of fun on Sunday if you're looking for something to do. Also, be listening tomorrow. You should listen every day, but especially tomorrow, because in the 8 o'clock hour, that'll be with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad. In the noon hour, with us here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. And the 4 o'clock hour, with Jared and the GM. You're going to have a chance to qualify for a free Nashville Predators jersey.
Ooh.
Once again, the hours, the 8 o'clock hour, the morning show, the noon hour on our show, and the 4 o'clock hour on the afternoon show. Be listening for your cue to call, where you'll have a chance to qualify for a free Predators jersey. Just wanted to pass that along. Might want to keep that in mind for tomorrow. That's tomorrow. Now, a couple things to pass along. I told you the news about the Phillies. Well, it continues to not be good on that front. Remember, this is exactly 1 week today when Major League Baseball started up their 60-game season. There were two games on the docket, a doubleheader last Thursday. That's how fresh and new this is. You've already had the Marlins shut down everything for the week. They are supposed to resume next Tuesday their season. Today, Blue Jays manager Charlie Montoya has just been informed that their games in Philadelphia this weekend have been postponed.
So no doubleheader.
Like Blue Jays, Phillies this weekend, as you alluded to. No doubleheader on Saturday. This weekend series postponed.
And then there were 28.
Mm-mm-mm. Which cannot make college football and the NFL feel good right now. It cannot.
It can't, but I still – with the NFL, I still just feel like they're just in – they're not in a bubble, but they're in their bubble. They're just in there, we're not baseball. We got this under control. We're just going to do our own thing. But you have to pay attention to it. I mean, you can't ignore it.
Well, they can have that mentality, but I think it was Sean Payton who said it yesterday. He said he would not be surprised if a game gets canceled because, and his words were, a position group, right? They are, you know how this works. Position groups, they're together all the time, and we know how quickly, as we have found out with the Marlins, how quickly this could spread, right? And he said, if you lose a position group, right, if you lose your offensive line and they've all tested positive, are you really going to ask that team to play an NFL game on Sunday? If your right. secondary room goes down, testing positive for COVID-19, are you going to ask that team to play a game no. on Sunday? So you can have that mentality. We're the NFL. Nothing's going to slow us down. Nothing's going to stop us until stuff like that happens. And Sean Payton, who is a well-known coach in the league, said just yesterday, said, I'm not going to be surprised if we lose a game. If games are called, if games are suspended and postponed and don't happen as scheduled because of stuff like that happening. I mean, what will the league do when that happens?
Well, and I know Ryan Tannehill is doing a Zoom call right now with the media, and I saw that Terry McCormick put this out. Tannehill on a possible quarterback quarantine. Until I'm told that that's what we're doing, I'm not putting a lot of time into thinking about that. But that has been rumored to be out there that they would either quarantine the quarterback separately, quarantine a quarterback so you know that you're going to have one available, because you bring up the position groups and you
there,
can apply
There you
it.
Go. That's the prime. I mean, that is right. the primo position group right there.
And so that, you know, because – for instance, let's just play the what-if game, and God forbid, but if Derrick Henry all of a sudden tests positive, but Darrington Evans and Kari Blasingame and if Daylon Dawkins is on the roster, Daylon Dawkins, they're all good. Well, you don't have your best player, but you have a running back. But Ryan Tannehill, the quarterbacks, I mean, that's hard to fill in for. That's hard to replace. So do you have a separate quarterback, or do you have a handful of players that are your taxi squad, maybe not the practice squad, but a taxi squad that they're quarantined at a separate place? I mean, that is something that baseball's done. But these are some questions that the NFL is going to have to answer and figure out of what is the proper way to do this. Because, yeah, you're right. I mean, all of a sudden, hey, the O-line – you know, all of them, all eight on our roster, nine on our roster, they all tested positive. We don't have an O-line. Yeah, you can't play. You're done. Yeah. You can't play.
Well, I mean, you just said it. I mean, the biggest thing will be, you know, I mean, can you imagine the Seattle Seahawks, if their quarterback room tests positive, you're going to expect Pete Carroll and the Seahawks to play a game?
Right.
You think they're gonna going to want to play a game?
We're going Wildcat the whole way.
Right. I mean, you know, I mean, there's – I mean, we go down the list. The Kansas City Chiefs, I mean, you want to start talking about the, you know, we want to go back to the list, Mike Sando's list, and talk about the phase one quarterbacks or tier one quarterbacks. Room test positive, you're going to ask those teams to play that game on Sunday? Knowing how much a Mahomes means to the Chiefs, how much a guy like Russell Wilson means to the Seahawks, how much an Aaron Rodgers means to the Packers? We've seen life without Aaron Rodgers with Green Bay. It's not pretty.
No.
It's not pretty. And it wouldn't be any different in Seattle. If Seattle didn't have Russell Wilson, they're a 6-10 team. 7-9. That's what they are.
Oh, easy.
And 7-9 may be a stretch.
Yeah, that could be generous.
That may be very generous. So how will they handle that?
I don't think that they necessarily know the answer yet. I think that they're looking at it as it's a game-by-game, day-by-day situation, and that's kind of how they have to go about it. And but you do have to have – you have to have a plan. I mean, they're going to have to come up with a plan before they start playing games. Like, when we ask these questions, so what if this happens? Well, if this happens, then this. Well, if that happens, then this. You know, but – because right now we're just speculating of, well, what do you do? Well, you don't play the game. And Sean Payton may very well be right that you might have a 15, a 14, a 13-game season, that you have some weeks that get wiped out. Or you just – but I mean, for playoffs and all of that, you can't have one team, you know, the Titans can't play 15 and the Texans play 14. I mean, that wouldn't work. So it just falls in line with everything else that we were asking until these other sports got around. We're seeing the bubble work, at least right now, for the NHL and the NBA. But, you know, baseball has two teams that are down. They're out.
And by the way, I do wonder, as we talked to Wes Durham in the second hour of the show, talking about Virginia Tech's cornerback Caleb Farley, who is, you know, a projected first-round pick, right? I mean, he's one of those guys. I mean, we all know, we identify those guys, right? They're going to be high draft picks. I do wonder. There's others that are projected to go high. And if they're eligible to come out, I wonder how many of those guys are going to start opting out and not risking it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I do believe that that's certainly going to happen. And, you know, one thing that we brought up with Paul Feinbaum was the scholarship thing. The SEC announced that they would honor scholarships. So, I mean, that's something that I think is good. But, yeah, I mean, you're going to have that. You just are. I mean, there's obviously a huge risk involved, and I will go back to at the very beginning of this, we talked to Rick Stockstill on the show, and he said, if it's not safe for the fans and the kids in the classroom, then these guys that are tackling and laying on top of each other, you know, how is it safe for them? So it's true. And these are the risks that they're going to have to weigh.
I just saw that Pro Volleyball League is supposed to play their games in Municipal Auditorium, I guess, starting next February 2021.
Wow. I didn't even know. I mean, that's cool that this is yet another
obviously
thing.
I think this is all brand new, so I don't know. We'll need to learn a little bit more about this, but just seeing this for the first time, so just thought I would pass that along. That'll do it for hour number three. We'll come back. Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet to start the fourth and final hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.